The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.
This week, Burst, that's me, spoke with members of The Uncontrollables, a student group out of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. The Uncontrollables spoke with me about the organizing they do on and off of campus, linking in with resistance at the Durham County Jail and spreading information about reproductive health care, for instance. The main gist of the conversation is about the walkouts at many of the UNC-related schools around North Carolina planned for this Tuesday, March 1st at 11 a.m. in protest of the installment of Margaret Spellings as president of the UNC system by the Board of Governors. Spellings is a former Secretary of Education under President George W. Bush and was a principal proponent of No Child Left Behind, as well as being an advisor to the Boston Consulting Group, criticized for gutting and privatizing parts of the Louisiana education system. Fears include that the BOG, not me, secretly installed Spellings in order to further privatization and sell-off of the UNC system, in particular damaging historically black and native universities and colleges in the system. More on The Uncontrollables can be found at facebook.com/CarolinaUncontrollables. But first, a few announcements. Anarchist prisoner Eric King has accepted a non-cooperating plea deal. He'll sign that on March 3rd. If you're in Kansas City, Missouri, and want to attend or want to find out more, check out supporterickking.wordpress.com. A request for letters supporting parole for accused former Black Liberation Army militant and new African activist and acupuncturist, Dr. Mutulu Shakur, by the doctor is up on MutuluShakur.com, along with information of his recent denial of release after serving 30 years after his arrest on February 12th of 1986. I'm speaking with members of the Okay, is that the correct way of saying it? Uncontrollables?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Should I say UNC Uncontrollables?
No. You can say Uncontrollables with a capital UNC if you want.
Okay.
We say we hate cops and we love puns.
Okay. I'm speaking with members of the Uncontrollables based on the campus of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Facebook page for the group describes themselves as, quote, your local UNC radicals. We're also anti-authoritarians, anti-capitalists, and up to no good do-gooders. We seek out a world without rulers and rules, where we can live freely without having to compete against each other. We seek out a movement of uncontrollable dreamers who don't believe in authority for its own sake. We want to seduce you. Thanks a lot for taking the time to chat. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Outside of that description, would you like to introduce yourselves or not? And would you mind talking about the history of the group and how you would personally see its purpose?
We're three members of the group, and we've been around since 2012. This group kind of grew out of the local anarchist scene in our town and has since evolved into kind of a more student-focused project.
It was originally with a focus of being able to use campus resources to benefit like the local community and activism in the local community, but as said, it's grown a lot more towards student-focused issues and student organization.
So mainly what we do is we host a lot of events every semester. A lot of those are speaker events, workshops, panels, that sort of thing. We have brought speakers from all over the country and actually the world. In the past, some examples of really cool speakers that we've brought to campus and hosted are like ex-Black Panthers organizers, like Shanti Alston and Eddie Conway. We've also brought, you know, former organizers for the Earth Liberation Front.
Protesters from Brazil, from Turkey.
Yeah, like contemporary anarchist authors like Chris Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also had a lot of success kind of using this group as a platform to host events that like we just made up, you know, like we did an event with some friends about punk music and the history of punk music as it relates to anarchism.
That was a lot of fun.
We did one about how to get an abortion in North Carolina and, like, just did the research. Like, where can you go? You know, how much does it cost? What does it feel like? And, like, just by ourselves with some other students just, like, had a workshop about that. So it's been really awesome to be able to use the university to, like, reserve space, get money, and have access to resources to do whatever we want and to kind of respond to needs in the Triangle area.
One of my favorite events from last semester, actually, was we did a radical walking tour of our town since our school is located, like, in the downtown of Chapel Hill. We actually put together ourselves and we delivered this really successful walking tour that pointed out local sites of resistance, cool subversive graffiti around town that we had seen.
Yeah, we talked about like history of the desegregation movement, you know, back in the 60s, as well as building occupations that happened like 5 years ago. So yeah, we've made zines in the past. We've put out like anarchist literature.
We do a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you find?
Oh, and like one thing we're doing later this semester is we have used university money to book CC McDonald as a speaker. And I think as we've evolved as a group, have started thinking about how we can use our access to university money to redistribute wealth and like make sure that the people we invite to speak for like big fat honorariums are like people of color, like femmes, people who need that money rather than seeking out like successful, you know, white like published authors for those like honorarium type events. So we're really excited to bring Cece. She's a black trans woman who defended herself against a racist attack and was sentenced to prison in a men's prison. And like, we think she's going to have a lot to say about prison abolition. And we're really pumped about that.
That's really great. I'm kind of surprised that you're willing to speak so candidly about the relationship between the speaking tours and the funding sort of part of it, as opposed to just like, and as a great side note, this money gets, you know, distributed to these folks that we specifically choose, like voices that don't get expressed generally. But cool.
Yeah, we've also, last semester, we hosted, so we're located in Chapel Hill, which is about a half an hour from Durham. And there's been a long campaign recently about horrible things happening in the Durham County Jail. They were holding people in their cells for 23 hours a day in what was called a lockback. They serve horrible food. Like, it's really awful. And so last semester, we hosted folks as invited speakers who have been incarcerated in the Durham County Jail and who spoke about, like, what it was like, you know, in the first person and stuff. And so we're going to try to do another event with different incarcerated folks this semester. But yeah, we're trying to be intentional about our platform and our access to resources.
I think that's really respectable. With events, like, I mean, you're getting speakers and people who have these experiences to talk about, like, their personal experiences and their understandings of the world that we live in, and that's really important. How much, if you're hosting this stuff on campus, how much of off-campus neighbors, like folks from Chapel Hill or Carrboro or Raleigh or Durham come to the university to see stuff? Like, was there much off-campus participation in the, for instance, the abortion education presentation?
Absolutely. Yeah. So our events, depending on the event, but a lot of them do get a lot of off-campus non-student participation in them. All of our events are open to the greater public. So it's really common for us, especially with bigger speakers or speakers from other cities, it's really common for a huge chunk of our audience to not necessarily be UNC students, but people from the local community, people from Durham, people from other cities.
Outside of the activities or you inviting folks onto the campus, how would you describe the relationship between the university and the folks that inhabit it with the neighboring communities? Pretty separate, or is there a lot of overlap, or is
there are overlap in some ways. I mean, folks from town come and use the dining hall.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's exactly antagonistic. I would say it's, I mean, UNC is an open campus where like you just walk from the sidewalk onto like the grass. So it doesn't feel super closed. And like, we generally don't have like a lot of police harassment of people on campus. Like, sometimes we do. Like, recently we were with a friend, in the student union, and a cop, like, we noticed a cop was watching us, And he, like, looked out from behind a pole, like, 20 feet away and, like, did the come hither motion with his finger. And I went over and talked to him, and he was like, "Who's that guy? How do you know him? He's not a student." Like, and I was like, "Shut the hell up. He's our friend. Like, go away." But so, I mean, I feel like we have a pretty good relationship with the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would say on a whole, probably the greater UNC student body doesn't have a hugely deep relationship with the town itself, considering, you know, it's a university, it's, you know, students are here for 4 years, and most people are coming from not in town. But, like, I'm a Chapel Hill local, I'm a Chapel Hill native, I've lived here all my life, and I go to university here, so, like, I am... personally really interested in the Uncontrollables building a really strong relationship with the local community, which we are.
One thing that would be sort of antagonistic is that UNC students are gentrifying a historically black neighborhood mm-hmm. in Chapel Hill called Northside. And whereas like 20 years ago, pretty much every house in that neighborhood was owned by like black homeowners, now something like 60% of it is student rentals and rents are going up, and students are just really not conscious of that, and the university isn't really doing anything to mitigate that. And basically, you know, poor people, black people, people of color are being pushed out of Chapel Hill and, to an extent, Durham, and just, like, even the dining hall workers who work here have to live, like, an hour or an hour and a half away because real estate is so expensive here and rent is so expensive. So... that would be a place where there is actually kind of a problem, and it's, I don't think it's talked about as much as it should be. But we talked about that on our walking tour that we did.
That's great. That's great. Like, it, yeah, it seems like the I also went to college in a place where I lived just 15 miles down the road or whatever. So the connection of my connection to the place and my desire to see my hometown and surrounding area get better, like, there was never that disconnect that a lot of students coming from other parts of California, in that case, or other parts of the country had.
Right.
So engaging that over the walking tour, and also having, like, bringing folks formerly incarcerated at the Durham County Jail in to talk about their experience and make that connection there and try to invest folks mm-hmm. in the neighboring, in the triangle. I think that's beautiful. That's really cool.
Thank you.
And it sounds like maybe a different dynamic, but as I've been told from friends in Greensboro, like, the university is having a huge impact there. The UNC there is having a huge impact on rents and availability of housing, and actually buying up large amounts of property that are like just mass gentrifying neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Seems something of the model. Well, so austerity is a term that I hear most frequently applied to cuts in spending and privatization of institutions in the European context, not as a part of dialogue in North America. But on March 1st, Margaret Spellings will be taking over as president of the University of North Carolina system. UNC Chapel Hill, where you're based out of in central North Carolina, is one of the oldest public universities in the U.S. Can you explain the implications of this appointment and the wider context of education privatization?
Sure. So there are so many things we could talk about here. Margaret Spellings' appointment is part of what we see as a larger effort to corporatize the UNC system and make our universities more like companies, which means treating the employees as like ish. And this woman continually refers to us as customers and consumers. She'll say in the same sentence, "We need to give our customers and consumers, you know, a quality education." And I'm like, okay, well, if I'm a customer, like, what's the return policy on this degree? You know what I mean? Like, isn't the customer always right? so that's kind of one aspect of it. She has a history of working in the for-profit education sector. She was on the board of the Apollo Group, which owns the University of Phoenix, which probably sounds familiar because of TV ads. And it's basically a scam. It was an online university that offered, like, quote-unquote degrees, and they're actually currently under investigation for fraud by the Department of Education because they used false advertising to appeal to poor folks, students of color, first-generation students, returning students, veterans, and misrepresented the likelihood of them getting a degree or how that would help people get a job. And this Margaret Spellings, okay, they imposed her as the president of a 17 university public university system, And she ran, you know, she worked for this company that owns the University of Phoenix, which had a 4% graduation rate. Like, it's totally fake. So how can she possibly run a large, successful university system? And then, I don't know if somebody else wants to talk about the debt related to that. Or something else about Margaret Spellings. There are so many things we could talk about.
Yeah, cool. So other moves to privatize and corporatize UNC, like we mentioned earlier. So what's happening right now is chancellors and administrators in the UNC system keep getting these ridiculous raises at the same time that faculty and workers actually are getting their wages freezed or
They never get any raises.
Right. They never get any raises. More and more of UNC Chapel Hill faculty are being hired on now on a non-permanent basis. So that's, you know, it's just like not stable income. Their tenuring rates are going down, that sort of thing.
Yeah. They hire them as adjuncts, which means they're contracted like for a year.
Yeah.
And they're paid on a per course basis. So a lot of those folks end up living near the poverty line. They have no job stability. They, you know, could be like let go next semester and they don't get benefits. So like the situation of adjuncts is getting worse, and more people who wanted to be professors are now adjuncts. And that's more like what, you know, some corporation would do is hire you as a temp worker, not give you any benefits, pay you, you know, some horrible hourly wage, and then you live a precarious life and there's nothing you can do about it.
Meanwhile, the admin salaries from positions are inflated by both the system and Margaret Spellings, what, $600,000?
Margaret Spellings was hired with a salary of $775,000 and a mansion and a car and moving expenses and an amazing severance package if she ever decides to quit.
Meanwhile, the adjuncts are living below the poverty line.
Yeah, and UNC's relationship with its workers, I mean, it's always been pretty shitty, but that's also one of the things that's getting worse. Like, for example, just, I think, last year, UNC introduced a new inclement weather policy.
Just this like, January 1st of 2016.
Okay, yeah, so in January of this year, UNC introduced a new inclement weather policy that actually basically makes it harder for workers to get paid for inclement weather. Or it doesn't pay workers for inclement weather.
Yeah.
And UNC has had this longstanding contract. Our dining services have a contract with a company called Aramark, who makes huge profits in the prison industry.
Yeah, Aramark is, as you know, you might probably know, one of the biggest beneficiaries of the prison industrial complex. They provide the food in our dining halls and also the horrible maggot-infested food in the Durham County Jail. So UNC is complicit in the prison industrial complex by hiring Aramark. And actually, if you look at the history of the privatization of UNC food services, that happened in the 60s after dining hall workers went on strike and organized for better working conditions. So we could go on. So Spellings worked for the University of Phoenix, which has a 4% graduation rate, and caused a lot of poor students to take out a lot of debt. At the same time, she is currently on the board of CNATE, a student loan collection agency. I shit you not, this woman is a leech making money off of student debt and student suffering and students being tied to these loans that they, you know, that can never go away, not even in bankruptcy. At the same time that she's working for a university that actively puts people in debt, knowingly, fraudulently. And then they want her to come lead a relatively affordable public university system. She has a vested interest in increasing tuition, decreasing scholarships, and putting more students in debt. It's sick. It's disgusting. It makes no sense. She should never have been chosen, and we will never accept her because of this. I mean, no student has a reason to support this person. She's a leech. So that has to do with privatization, too, because, like, you know, our understanding of austerity in Europe is that it has a lot to do with debt, and that, you know, countries like Greece are in debt, and the World Bank and the IMF and the EU want to force them to do anything to pay back that debt and cut social services. And so the idea that Margaret Spellings has a vested interest in student debt, at the same time that just last year the UNC System Board of Governors put a financial aid cap that said 15%, a maximum of 15% of tuition revenue can go towards scholarships, which meant cuts in scholarships like the Carolina Covenant Scholarship, which is for first-generation students. So scholarship money is going away. The salaries for the top administrators are rising while faculty get shafted. We could also talk about, like, policing in that sense. Like, at least on our campus, we don't have a huge problem with, like, people asking you for your ID all the time. But they recently spent something like $60,000 to put body cameras on all UNC police. There was a supposed attempted kidnapping recently off campus, which is obviously not a not an epidemic. At UNC, people aren't constantly getting kidnapped, but they use that as an excuse to increase foot patrols and, like, beef up security. And we were really disturbed by that because we were like, why is this one-time freak incident justifying a permanent increase in foot patrols? Who is going to be most affected by this increase in foot patrols? Is it white students? No, it's going to be students of color, faculty of color, you know, people who just, according to the system, look like they don't belong at a place like a university. So we were disturbed by that.
Not to mention the homeless population on Franklin Street that is greatly affected by increased police control.
Absolutely.
Increased police patrols and the new housing center for the homeless that was built miles off Franklin in order to keep them away from the student population.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, who's going to be affected by that? Absolutely, the homeless folks and other people who come on campus to use the services like the dining hall and stuff. And
And then in terms of students' relationships with police that we are very familiar with, just in the last Board of Governors meeting, so the Board of Governors is like the big shadowy board that runs the entire UNC system.
They're the ones who hired Margaret Smalley,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so at the last Board of Governors meetings, these meetings are public meetings, right?
They're actually, by law.
Yeah, yeah. they're supposed to be public meetings. So, you know, students, we are supposed to be able to go in there and voice whatever issues we have about the UNC system. So a lot of students showed up at the last Board of Governors meeting basically to, vocalize dissent with the appointment of Margaret Spellings. And with no provocation, the students at the meeting were actually assaulted by this storm of riot cops. And they actually very violently arrested four students.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of unbelievable. They dragged people out of that meeting with no warning, handcuffed them, and then ended up charging one of the students with felony assault on an officer. And you can watch these videos and see that nobody assaulted any cops at all. But yeah, so that got dropped in court. But the idea that they're going to heavily militarize the future meetings of this body that appointed Margaret Spellings is disturbing. The fact that these are public meetings and that they have repeatedly gone into closed sessions when students arrived. Like, it's our university, and then they're going to criminalize our desire to preserve the school that we go to.
Yeah. So this instance, coupled with everything else that's happened with the Board of Governors and the Board of Governors' record, is just, it makes it very, very clear who the campus police are interested in protecting.
So the North Carolina NAACP Youth and College Division has called for the removal of Spellings and increased transparency of the Board of Governors of the UNC system in response to her appointment. Can you speak about the claims that Spellings plans to dismantle historically Black and Native colleges around the state during her tenure as president of the UNC system?
Sure. So there were two newspaper articles published recently. Basically, every 5 years, rumors resurface, or the idea resurfaces among the North Carolina State Legislature and Board of Governors to rename some of the schools in the UNC system that don't follow the UNC place format of the name. But a lot of those schools, like Fayetteville State University, Elizabeth City State University, North Carolina Central University, NCA&T, are historically Black colleges and universities. And so the Board of Governors says, oh, well, we just want to change the name to make them all consistent. But, I mean, the alumni and the students there are like, why? No, don't change the name. This is our legacy of this being an HBCU or a college serving Indigenous students in the case of UNC Pembroke. So recently, another plan to that effect was leaked, and the Republican Senate leader, Phil Berger, in the North Carolina State Senate, has this plan to lower tuition to $500 for in-state students at these schools that are supposedly struggling. But the reason that some of these smaller HBCUs are struggling is that the Board of Governors and the General Assembly have not been funding them properly for decades. So they are always looking for ways to cut funding to HBCUs and then use that as justification to say, oh, look, this school is failing. This school is struggling. It's not efficient anymore. We should merge it with nearby predominantly white institutions. We should force them to raise the admission cap for out-of-state students. And so they're presenting this as like, oh, look, lower tuition at schools in the USC system. This is great. We're supporting education. This is more access. It's more affordable. But really, they want to force these five historically black and indigenous universities to admit a whole bunch of white out-of-state students, change their names, merge with nearby white schools. And, you know, to an extent, I think for students at UNC, this has been kind of a lesson in the importance of HBCUs. I mean, so like, I'm white and I probably don't know anybody who went to an HBCU and did not understand why those are important. But a huge percentage of black engineers, black physicists graduate from HBCUs. North Carolina's HBCUs granted 47% more degrees to black students than the predominantly white institutions in 2011. So they're really, really, really important. And I think if we were to ask ourselves, okay, why is it important to have HBCUs or universities for Native students? Well, at a predominantly white institution like UNC, we have things like buildings named after virulent racists. And the administration doesn't care at all. It took years to get Saunders Hall changed to Carolina Hall. And Saunders was the leader of the North Carolina KKK. And back in 1922, when that building was named for him, the Board of Trustees listed his KKK membership as a qualification that made him deserve a building name. And the UNC administration was just so resistant to changing that. And, you know, students of color had to walk in that building and have class every day. We have a monument to a Confederate soldier right in the middle of our campus. It's the most prominent statue on all of campus. And so, like, what must it feel like to have to walk past that and know that the administration does not give a f*** about how you feel about that or about what that says in terms of who they serve and who they protect and who they care about? So we think that the bigger, kind of more prestigious, predominantly white institutions in the UNC system need to immediately stand up and speak out about this and be like, nope, you're not going to close these HBCUs. They're important. This is a 17 school university system, and it's going to stay that way. And so in terms of spellings, the fact that the Board of Governors appointed her in such a secretive, underhanded way to us indicates that they expect her to go along with these plans that they've had for a long time to close the HBCUs. She constantly talks about access and affordability and accountability. But if they're going to use affordability to mean eviscerating the HBCUs, that's not really affordable. Spellings talks about, she said recently in a speech to the Board of Governors like 2 weeks ago, education is the new civil right. But if you go back and look at some of her speeches from her time as Secretary of Education, she used that same language to justify No Child Left Behind, which she was the architect of under George W. Bush. No Child Left Behind and standardized testing is horrible for students of color and really just ends up cementing the privilege of, you know, white upper-class students, because that's what standardized testing really tests. It tests how good you are at taking standardized tests.
It tests how much money you have to pay to prep for standardized tests.
Yeah, like the SAT. Your SAT score most closely correlates with household income, not college success, not intelligence, not your grades. It's literally a test of your socioeconomic status more than anything. So, you know, with cuts to scholarships at all the schools and with an increased emphasis on standardized testing, that's going to hurt students of color at every UNC system school. But these plans to close HBCUs are, you know, they're inching ever closer. And so we are doing everything we can right now to mobilize against that and kind of do the political education to explain to the UNC system population what the hell this is and why it matters and why we have to stop them from closing these schools.
You're listening to The Final Straw on Asheville FM, WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina, Micro Machines. And this is our conversation with members of the UNC Chapel Hill-based Uncontrollables Anarchist Student Group. Much of the conversation focuses around criticisms of the upcoming and a protest around the upcoming installation of President of the UNC system, Margaret Spellings. So not to continue centering the conversation on Margaret Spellings as an individual or whatever, but because we're on this topic, can you talk about what some of the student organizing on different campuses or intra-campus organizing that's going on and what it also just looks like at Chapel Hill?
Yeah, so definitely for the past couple of months especially, all of the or a lot of the UNC system schools and student and faculty organizers at these schools have definitely been putting a lot of pressure on the Board of Governors itself, especially at the monthly Board of Governors meetings. The Board of Governors has these big public meetings roughly once a month, and they basically jump between the various UNC system schools to have these. As UNC system students and faculty have been consistently showing up at each and every one of these meetings, basically reiterating again and again, Spellings has to go. Spellings is not right for UNC. Nobody wants her here. A lot of faculty from around the UNC system recently dropped this really big petition basically to get rid of Spellings because the faculty also do not like her at all. Mm-hmm. What's coming up really, really soon? So next week, Margaret Spellings is actually officially taking office on March 1st, right? On Tuesday, March 1st, Margaret Spellings' first official day in office. What UNC system schools are actually doing for that is the entire UNC system is going to be walking out on March 1st.
At 11 a.m. on like eight or nine different campuses so far have announced that they're going to be doing walkouts, but
I think Asheville has one.
So maybe not.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
App
has one. A&T.
UNC Wilmington.
Fayetteville.
UNCG.
Yeah.
I don't actually know if Asheville has one.
I think we're going to force the Board of Governors and Spellings to wake up because we're talking about like thousands of students at one time on one day all across the state. Like, we are organized. We know what's happening and we're not having it. So we think this statewide walkout is going to be really cool. Just to speak to why faculty are deeply concerned about Margaret Spellings. So as Secretary of Education under George W. Bush, PBS wanted to run an episode of Buster's Postcards in which one of the children in the show had two moms. I mean, that was the extent of the discussion in the show, was that they said like, oh, Timmy has two moms. Anyway, next thing. And Margaret Spellings, who at the time was Secretary of Education, sent a letter to PBS being like, how dare you use public funding for this? This is inappropriate. Parents might not want their children to see this. If you use public money for something like this again, you know, we will cut your funding. In response, PBS's CEO resigned. This is so messed up. And recently in an interview with our student newspaper, she said, oh, you know what? I don't have a discriminatory bone in my body. That was just because it was public funding. To which the faculty said, oh, so does that mean you're not going to use public funding to support the sexuality studies program? To support LGBTQ teaching, research, and programming? So the faculty council here at Chapel Hill passed a resolution demanding that Spellings confirmed that she will continue to fund LGBTQ initiatives. Like, the idea that public money can't go towards anything except like supporting, you know, heteronormativity is really, really concerning. And so I think the faculty are concerned about censorship. They're concerned about funding. They're concerned about, like, you know, the dismantling of the university as a place where critical thought can happen. And, you know, attempts by Pat McCrory to turn this into a vocational school.
Another reason faculty should be worried is Margaret Spellings bringing in the Boston Consulting Group, which was well known for when it was brought into the New Orleans public school system, dismantled teacher unions, and it's just she's bringing in systems that will greatly adversely affect faculty and students. She's well known for her statements where she would not comment upon the lifestyle choices of LGBTQA+ individuals, and she's just not a right choice for anyone in the system.
No, nobody wants her.
Mm-hmm. Has she responded to the faculty petition at all?
No, I think they released it on like February 18th. But no, as far as I know, she hasn't. Hi. She hasn't. She hasn't responded to it yet. I mean, in that interview, her attempt to respond to the concerns was like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm not homophobic. I just don't think public money should go to gay people." So her response so far has been like even more concerning. And you know, some of the faculty are looking at like Title IX, which says that like you know all students need to have equal access to educational resources and stuff, and like the university's basic non-discrimination policy. Like, did she violate the non-discrimination policy when she said that after she had been appointed? You know, when she'd already been hired, and she's out there saying things like public money can't go to LGBTQ things or shouldn't. So that might be even grounds to like fire her according to the university's own policy. So she's really like crossed the line on all fronts.
So in response, are student groups and faculty groups calling for a separate appointment, or what exactly would be the next step that, you know, after the walkouts?
Yeah, we want a new transparent search for a UNC system president. She just can't, like, there are so many things, like the student debt, that she makes money off student debt. She ran the University of Phoenix. She's a homophobe. Every single one of her policy plans is super racist. As Secretary of Education, she declined federal funding for HBCUs. Like we said, No Child Left Behind is racist. So, you know, I don't care how much she thinks she has reformed herself in the past 10 years. She just can't be the president of the UNC system. So, yeah, we're going to keep f***ing shit up until she resigns or is fired. But, no, we're not having it. So faculty and students are all in agreement. We need a different president. The search process needs to be way more open and transparent. Like, they appointed her in a secret midnight meeting, pretty much. Never announced any candidates until they were just like, oh, yeah, we hired this lady. And, the you know, 2 days after they appointed her, the head of the Board of Governors resigned. So that's why the NAACP put in this Freedom of Information request, because they also pushed out a UNC system president, Tom Ross, who was doing fine. Like, nobody had a problem with Tom Ross, except that he was a Democrat and all the people on the Board of Governors are Republicans. So the whole process of her appointment was completely unethical. And yeah, we want a new system president. And we also think the fact that the Board of Governors was even able to do this is indicative of really serious problems with that structure. So we want 20 seats on the Board of Governors for students, faculty, and workers from all UNC system schools. We think it needs to be totally restructured. It makes no sense that 33 white businessmen with no experience working in education are making these decisions and proposing completely bogus ideas like $400 tuition at some of these in these public HBCUs. Like, they have no idea what they're doing. So it's our university, and we should be the ones deciding what happens with it.
As of now, is the situation that the Board of Governors are appointed by the governor of the state?
Yeah, they're appointed by the state legislature.
Oh, okay, but the legislature. Yeah. Hold on 1 second. They just set the alarm in here. Just a second. Oh.
Stay safe.
Are we being interviewed from, like, an occupied building? I'm kidding.
Can I call you all back?
Yes.
Thank you. It'll be, like, probably 15 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, it's been recording the whole time, too. Yay! Now I've got a good recording of myself probably swearing up a storm and trying to figure out what my code is. So you mentioned the idea of 20 seats on the Board of Governors being filled by members of faculty and students. Can you talk a little bit more about that as a proposal?
So, I mean, we are, or there are plans in the works for, like, a big meeting for, like, organizers from across the UNC system to get together and, like, actually talk about what we all want. Like, since we go to UNC, which is the biggest most prestigious school, we want to be cautious about making demands based on our perspective when we really feel like the students at these schools that are like being threatened with closure need to be centered in that discussion about like what should happen, instead of us just being like, right, we need to speak out for them. Like, let's actually like go find them and talk to them.
Because like as a predominantly white university and, you know, probably the most visible university in the system, UNC Chapel Hill probably honestly has comparatively the least to lose to Spellings in office. Whereas, mm-hmm, you know, you compare our situation with HBCUs in the system and other schools in the system. It's important that UNC Chapel Hill doesn't position ourselves as like some sort of radical vanguard of, mm-hmm, this Board of Governors organizing movement.
Yeah. So just kind of broadly, like the idea that like we're kind of encouraging people to think about is like, why are these white men even deciding these things for us in the first place? Like, why is it that this appointment of Margaret Spellings was even able to happen? It's because the Board of Governors as a structure actually makes no sense. And this is our university, and so students, faculty, and workers should be the ones deciding what happened here. So, there are currently 33 seats on the Board of Governors. Like, you know, we should have enough voting power on that as actual members of the university to veto anything that they might propose and to make our own proposals. So, you know, whether it's 15 or 30 or a complete dismantling of the Board of Governors, students should be on there with a vote. And there, right now, there's one student position that doesn't have a vote, and that person is the president of the Association of Student Governments, which is like the group for all the student governments and all the system to come together. But that group, that organization doesn't really do a lot. It's kind of focused on like voting and advocacy and stuff like that. So that student isn't really necessarily representative of like what, you know, say student activists would want, or that they're not really advocating for structural change, yeah, but rather they like, if we have one vote as students, all that vote does is register dissent, but it doesn't actually change anything, especially if the student who has that vote is, you know, an upper-level student bureaucrat who rubs elbows with the Board of Governors on a regular basis and wants a future career in politics and is not there to up. So I don't know how they should be appointed, like ad hoc committees or something like that. Like, we don't, yeah, like I said, we don't want to kind of outline like a specific proposal by ourselves, but there should be students, faculty, and workers on that board, and we should have not just veto power, but the power to make proposals. And like these, you know, business people should not be sitting in a room making up completely bogus policies that they think will be more efficient.
Yeah, that position seems like it would just be kind of a resume builder more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is, pretty much.
Since we're mostly broadcasting out of Asheville, do you have any words for the student bodies and communities around Asheville as far as how to keep up with changes in the UNC system and how to join the resistance?
We would encourage students to, like, who are listening to this, whether at UNC Asheville or anywhere else, start a student group. UNC is probably unique in the system, or like Chapel Hill is probably unique in the system in terms of our ability to get funding as a student group. Like, if your school is struggling to stay open, there's not a lot of money for clubs to do fun things like this. But, you know, even having access to like reserving venues and some things like that can be really powerful. So I'd encourage students to start a student group based on radical politics wherever they are and do what they can with the resources that are available to them. Like,
and then they should come organize with us.
Yeah, send us a message, be our friend. Like, if you can dream it, you can do it, pretty much, in the age of Facebook events. Like, we did that abortion event just by reserving a space and making a Facebook event, and people came and we, you know, presented a thing. But like, we're thinking about doing another workshop kind of like that about gender and technologies of gender, and bringing like binders for people to try, and you know, like showing people how to make a packer out of a condom, and like using glitter to make your own facial hair, like, or fake, you know, glitter mustache. So there's really a lot you can do if you, I mean, you really only need like three people, pretty much, who are, you know, like an affinity group. And you can do a lot of cool stuff. Like, even if it's only discursive, like, you could make flyers. Like, if some f***ed up happened at your school, make flyers about it. Post them around. Like, even if that's it, you know, make people aware of the issues. Like, Yeah.
Make flyers, have teach-ins, talk to people, like get people aware of what's happening and communicate on what's happening, talk to other schools, get involved.
Yeah, one of our favorite tactics as the Uncontrollables is utilizing humor and snark in our political messages. Like, for example, every year at the beginning of fall semester, we have something called Radical Rush Week, which is a week straight of events every single day having to do with radical politics. So like that, the event that we did that we talked about briefly earlier on punk music and anarchism, that was one of the events of Radical Rush Week in that we did last semester. So was the Radical Walking Tour. Radical Rush Week itself, of course, it's kind of a playoff of the Greek system. And we actually got I thought this was really funny. We actually, right after advertising at the very beginning of the semester, like flyering for Radical Rush Week and telling all the, you know, fresh-eyed new students about Radical Rush Week, we started getting messages to our Facebook page asking how many rush events they had to attend in order to rush our frat.
And we were like, yeah, that's just a joke. We're not.
Three, you have to attend at least three.
Yeah, we're not really frat.
You could have played with that for a while and just sort of stretched it out, though.
Yeah.
Well, you have to interrupt five presentations by far right leaning, you know, Students for Western Civilization presentations. You have to.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Totally.
Yeah. And a couple years ago, before my time, so somebody else might want to pick up on this, Uncontrollables hosted, the College Republicans at UNC kicked up a fuss because the Uncontrollables got more funding than they did that particular semester.
Because they had ideas.
Yep.
They weren't good. Right, because we're good like that, and they're not. And so they kicked up a fuss, and they, like, wrote to Fox News, and Fox News ran an article.
They were on Fox News talking about how they got less funding than the interstitial.
So we're actually famous?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're actually, like, Fox News famous. You know, you're not a real radical until Fox News talks you, obviously. So we were on Fox News for that. And then in response to that, the Uncontrollables, because, you know, we're like really friendly, open-minded folks. So like we wanted to help out our friends, the College Republicans. So the Uncontrollables actually hosted a fundraiser for the College Republicans. And the fundraiser was called Frack the Old Well. The Old Well is this old well / water fountain on UNC's campus. It's you know, our symbol, our campus symbol. And the Uncontrollables basically like built this like giant fake fracking structure out of like PVC piping and set up this thing where they fracked the old well and filmed it in public. It's this big farcical type of parody event.
We raised 83 cents.
Yeah.
And we sent it to the Republicans the College Republicans account at the college administration for in a check form. So we're here to help out.
Yeah.
Tell me it was a large check. Like for photo ops or whatever.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. That's really funny. That's great. How do the Uncontrollables like engage with other folks on campus and other groups other than the College Republicans? Like do folks tend to come up and see the materials, the zines or the posters and react pretty well or engage in conversation, or is it, do you find yourselves just sort of like poking in at events and just doing your thing and leaving?
We have a pretty good relationship, I would say, with the rest of campus and the student body. The Uncontrollables are definitely not by any means isolated. We organize heavily with other groups. Most of us are involved in several other politically oriented student groups in addition to the Uncontrollables, so we're definitely not isolated. And like kind of students to whom these issues are of interest, they know about us. I like to think they generally have a positive impression of us. A lot of people, like, sometimes people organize events with us who aren't, like, necessarily, you know, regular Uncontrollables organizers, but, you know, we invite anybody to organize events with us if they want to.
Mm-hmm. And, we co-sponsored that event about abortion with the Reproductive Justice Group. We've had success getting co-sponsorships from departments. We've even gotten money from them. People know our group to an extent and think it's cool because we host these cool speaking events. Like that are for everyone, and we try to do a lot of publicity, and like people, I think at this point, think that we are cool and do cool stuff. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about NCORE and why that didn't happen and what you were planning around it, or do you want to skip that?
No, it just didn't happen. Yeah, okay. It would have been cool, but we didn't get the funding, and yeah.
Is that something you try to plan for the future, or?
Probably not.
All right.
Yeah, NCORE probably not happening at Chapel Hill.
If somebody else wanted to do it somewhere else, you know, we would go.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, yeah,
okay. Yeah. Like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I think there was this cool series of three presentations that were, or I guess not presentations, conferences that were held around North Carolina colleges. There was one, the one at UNC Chapel Hill was the first one. Warren Wilson was the second one outside of Asheville and Black Mountain or Swannanoa. And the third one happened, I think, in Greensboro. I didn't go to that one, but NC Rising was what they were called. And it hosted a series of presentations by different anarchists from around, I think all were from around North America, but just talking about their scenes or talking about the struggles they were involved in, theoretical discussions, concerts. It was really fun. I don't know. I was kind of imagining NCORE would be kind of along the same realm of just bringing a bunch of people together from all over and, you know, starting, sparking a little fire, what have you. But
yeah, we're really bummed out about what happened with NCORE. Yeah, we had really big dreams for it, but it didn't work out. And, like, we tried to kind of pull it together again after it didn't work out, and that attempt didn't work out. So it's, so we don't really feel like we're in the best position to be organizing NCORE right now.
No.
Is it difficult to be a campus-based organization and student organization that's lasted a while and like keep up fresh dynamics in the group? It seems like oftentimes campus groups will, unless they've been around for a really long time and have a lot of institutional support, will take shape under a charismatic leader of some sort, and then once that person's gone, sort of piddle away into nothingness.
So we definitely don't have a great deal of institutional support. You got that part right. So we've been around for a couple years, and we definitely have had people like come in and out, and we've had people graduate. And you know, I think like our philosophy towards it is that if things work out, they work out. If things change, they change. And if the group one day just like slowly kind of fades away, then like that's, I mean, that happens. You know, we're college students. Most of us are only here for 4 years. But we have had, like, organizers graduate. We're a non-hierarchical organization, so we don't really have leadership, per se. We have had, you know, key organizers graduate, certainly. And, you know, we're still here. I would say that we've definitely, you know, naturally due to who's in the group and who's doing the organizing, we have changed, like, you know, we've like adapted and we've made small changes throughout the years. Like, we're not exactly the same group that we started out as. I mean, our core message is still there. But you know, we're adaptable. We're flexible.
Do you continue to keep up in contact with folks that have graduated, or they just sort of go off and do their own thing?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Yeah.
If we needed anything, you know, they'd probably help us out.
Yeah.
People who've graduated have generally been still friendly with us, and like we've kept in contact with them if they think they have some information that would be useful for us, or if we need their help or something. We've stayed in contact with quite a few of them.
And we also have, you know, a lot of community support. So that's definitely really helpful. We a lot of our events we kind of hear about and get started due to kind of just word of mouth. And you know, somebody here heard a thing from their friend here who tells a friend who's a friend of ours that this person is on tour and they might be willing to drop by town. So we've definitely hosted events like that.
And you definitely are like set in a very fertile area for anarchism. It's pretty amazing and kind of not surprising, I guess, how just how many anarchists are in the Triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it wasn't us, it'd be someone else. Yeah.
One thing I recall from a few years ago during the 2014 Carbro Anarchist Book Fair, the ACAB, y'all did a breakout session that was inviting students to come and talk about organizing on their campuses. Did much come out of that for you? New connections or ideas?
Yeah, so we definitely, that breakout session was a lot of fun. I would say that we definitely, like, found some connections there. That said, most of those connections were student connections, so it's like, for example, most of the friends that I made in that breakout session have now graduated, or else transferred out of the state. So, you know, nature of student organizing, it's a 4-year cycle. But yeah, we did make connections there. And we did have conversations like between campuses that I definitely thought was pretty helpful. Just because, you know, anarchist/radical organizing at different campuses, like it looks very, very different. I think we might be the only group in the state that like ever explicitly identified ourselves as anarchist. We did make connections.
And for anyone who's in the, as we wrap this up, for anyone who's going to be in the Chapel Hill area, can you again describe when the CC McDonald presentation is going to be and where?
Yes. So CC McDonald is speaking at UNC Chapel Hill on Monday, March 21st at 7:00 p.m. in the Sonia Haynes Stone Center for Black History and Culture in the main auditorium there. The event is free, open to the public. There's going to be a Facebook event on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/CarolinaUncontrollables. And we'll send out information on our listserv. And if you want to be on that, you can message the page or email CarolinaUncontrollables@gmail.com. But yeah, 7:00 on March 21st in the Stone Center.
That was a really good stereo effect that you just had. for anyone, whether to be a community member that's concerned around employment on universities' campuses or public education in the state, or for any students or potential upcoming students or faculty members, how do you suggest that they could find out more and get involved around the March 1st Margaret Spelling's walkout protest around the UNC system?
So on Twitter or Facebook or Google or whatever, you can search #spellcheck. You can also check out #SaveOurHBCUs. Other ways to get involved.
Hunt down the nearest walkout.
So there definitely are walkouts at UNCW, UNC Wilmington, UNC Greensboro, North Carolina A&T, UNC App State. App State. The other ones? Chapel Hill? I don't think Fayetteville has announced one.
Okay, so let's not confirm anything there. But yeah, I think all of the walkouts are culminating in some sort of, you know, action or event that the walkout is kind of leading towards.
Yeah, or teaching or whatever.
So definitely showing up to that would be a fantastic.
Yeah, if a listener is a faculty member, they should get involved with Faculty Forward, which is organizing professors across the state. There are probably reps, you know, near or on your campus who are organizing faculty. Other ways to get involved, like if there's nobody organizing on your campus, you know, host a meeting, like invite people to like, hey, come learn about the Board of Governors, learn about Margaret Spellings, like do put a call out, you know, make flyers, post them around and like try to get some people together and do a thing.
Yeah, if they're trying to get connected with other people around the system and they don't know anybody yet, I mean, they could always message us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know people, like one or two people at probably every school, if somebody needed help starting something.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. I really appreciated it, and good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bursts.
You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
And you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.